This material has been reproduced and communicated to you by or on behalf of the Australian National University in accordance with Section 113P of the Copyright Act 1968. The material in this communication may be subject to copyright under the Act. Any further reproduction or communication of this material by you must be consistent with the provisions of the Act. Do not reproduce this material. Do not remove this notice.
Welcome to week 3 of Foundations of Public Administration. We're really lucky today to have Dr. Shubho Banerjee here with us to participate in a guest podcast. Shubho works at the interface between academia and public policy practice as the Deputy CEO, Research and Advisory at the Australia and New Zealand School of Government. He has a really interesting and interdisciplinary background with a PhD in physics from the ANU and master's degrees in history and environmental management from the University of Oxford, where he was also a Rhodes Scholar. He was also previously a Deputy Secretary in the Australian Public Service. So in this week, we've been discussing the role that public servants play in policy decision making and the importance placed on the concept of political neutrality within Westminster systems. Shubho, you've written about this topic before, and it's also something that in your current role you have to think about on a day-to-day basis. So my first question for you is, in your view, what's the role of research and evidence in providing good policy advice to governments?
Sure. Thanks, Laura. It's a pleasure to join you and to join your listeners, your class. I think it's a great question. We, as public servants, need to think very carefully about what constitutes good policy advice. And for me, the way into this question is to start there. When I lecture about what constitutes good policy advice, I often talk about it requiring focus. You've got to answer the question that you've been set. Rigour, that it's got to be soundly based. It's got to show some imagination. You've got to think beyond the bounds of where we currently are and really think about the world as it could be. And it's got to have practicality. You've got to have some sense of getting things done in the world as it is. And I think all of those elements are important. You then bind them together into public advising practice and think about how you manage these things and lead things. But I often use that as a simple framework. So for me, a really important part of that is rigour and really trying to think about what does it mean to be soundly based. And I think we need to think about a well-structured problem definition. We've got to think very carefully about what the problem is exactly. We've got to think about being really clear about what the evidence is and an understanding of that evidence and how to interpret that evidence and how to bring it to bear. And then how to draw out from that some options and the implications of those options and to make a recommendation. So all of that, I think, really goes very crucially to this idea of what is the role of research and evidence. It is to ensure that there is rigour in policy advice, and that's incredibly important to make sure that your policy advice is good. You know, that's a really fundamental tenet of good public policy advice. As I think we're going to now go on and talk about, those things are, it's one thing to lay them out and talk about them in concept. When you try and do it in practice, there's a whole bunch of difficulties in terms of what that looks like day to day, as being a public servant in a department when you're asked for a brief. But there's also some really interesting conceptual issues about what do you mean by evidence? You know, whose evidence, under what circumstances, how do you interpret it, how do you understand the values lens through which people are talking to you, how do you understand the values lens through which you're interpreting the evidence? So I think those are actually extremely important things for public servants to grapple with. But I think overall, I guess I come from a broadly enlightenment tradition around these things. I think it's good to think about how the world works and that it's possible to discover some things about the way the world works. But as you do that, you need to be very conscious of how all of these contending issues that we were just talking about. How do you think about evidence? How do you think about the lens through which you're examining evidence? All come to play.
Thank you, Shubo. I do find it interesting that despite you identifying yourself as an Enlightenment man, this response is really not that different to one that I might put forward, despite being more of a post-structuralist myself. And thank you also for that great framework around focus, rigor, imagination, and practicality. I think this will be really useful for my students as they prepare for their assignment too, which is preparing a policy brief with recommendations about how to make implementation in a certain area better. But one of the other topics we've been talking about is the difficulties involved in speaking truth to power. What do you think the role of dialogue and responsiveness is in providing good policy advice to government, particularly in the face of those competing values and interests that you mentioned?
Yeah, I think this is really one of the most important practice questions that we face as public servants. And I think it really requires a careful examination of what it means to operate in a contemporary Westminster system in Australia. I think it's really, really important to think carefully about that as a public servant at all different levels. It infuses work all the way up and down the public service. This isn't a matter for senior leaders alone. You can't understand what your contribution as a public servant can and should be unless you grapple with these concepts of Westminster. And so I think it's great that you're doing it through this class, and it's really important for people to think carefully about this. The sorts of things that we're required to give advice on in general are hard. They're complicated. They have competing interests. They have multidimensional objectives. I think one of the things, I spent a couple of years working also for a private sector firm. I think one of the things that is striking in a lot of more commercial jobs is that the objective statement is often clearer and simpler. Like it might not be unidimensional, but it's closer to that. Whereas almost always in public policy problems, and the hard ones, you know, the ones that we're actually trying to put some serious thought into over time, they're just really complicated. And there are competing legitimate objectives going on. So there isn't in that sense, a technical solution, a derivable solution. So as you mentioned, Laura, my background is in physics and mathematics. Of course, there's an elegance and a kind of temptation about thinking that there is a single technical answer to problems. But in general, in public policy, that's just not the case. There is a kind of self-definitional part of this that if we're thinking hard about it, it's almost certainly because it hasn't been solved in some kind of reasonably straightforward way. So that's a long discursion around how it's hard kind of epistemologically. Given that basis, it's not surprising then that how you frame the problem in and of itself matters an enormous amount. And as you start framing that problem, you have to recognize from the start the role of values in that. And so your question, Laura, went to the importance of dialogue. In a contemporary Westminster system, ministers are responsible for taking decisions and reflecting ultimately value judgments at that sort of top level. That is proper, that is a reasonable exercise of the Westminster system. So we as public servants need to understand the way in which ministers are bringing values to bear in those conversations, in that sort of objective setting. And part of the role as a public servant is to draw out the implication of that. And often it will be through conversation, well, we hear your objective statement as A, B, and C. Now, Minister, even at that level, A conflicts a bit with B, and it's completely contrary to C. So which of those in what balance, and how are we going to think about it? Now, because these are complicated and difficult issues, in practice, you can only do that by talking about it and coming back and forth. Now, talking, I mean, in a broad sense, a written briefing, written argumentation is extremely important, but I just mean iteration, that there's got to be a sense of trying to lay out the problem, trying to then get the endorsement from ministers that you've heard the objective statement in a reasonable way, and then to work through from there what that means and where you go. And it's very, very often the case that for difficult problems, there are multiple kind of means of trying to get into them. And it's the role of the public service to think about those options. That's a really important way of crystallising how you get from intent to action. Often when I lecture, I talk about the particular role of the public service as needing to turn intent into action. It's not enough just to talk about intent or just to provide commentary. There's a lot of other places where people do that, but that's not the role of the public service. The role of the public service is intent into action. Now, in trying to do that, part of that role is clarifying intent. It's absolutely reasonable to say, well, these are the values that are at play, this is a way you can think about that, and to provide advice. You know, the intent is not somehow either perfectly defined or crystal clear or unproblematic in a technical sense. You know, like I keep talking about conflict and trade-offs because these are complicated issues. So one of the ways in which dialogue is often most important with the public service is that you can think about a back and forth with ministers about trying to get your problem definition in a way that really resonates, which then in turn goes to the analysis and the options and the recommendation and vice versa. It's not a straight line in thinking in that kind of way. And one of the ways that Ken Henry, who was a former Treasury Secretary, used to talk about this is as a senior public servant, you should think about this in three. The first time, once you've been thinking about a problem broadly, you should say, Minister, the department recommends this option, option A, but you also have options B, C, D, whatever it is. If from that the minister says, well, actually, I'm not convinced, I'd like to take some other option, the second pass in Ken's phrasing was, you have to then say, Minister, we've heard you, we understand why you are uncomfortable with A. Here are some ways in which we might mitigate that or deal with that or try and kind of work with you to try and achieve your objectives. And if the minister still says, no, I'm really not comfortable with it, I would rather do B or C, the third pass is then for the public service to say, we've heard you, you've chosen option B, this is how you can implement that in a form that, in our professional judgment, goes closest to your intent. So that's a much more complex and nuanced conversation back and forth about how these things need to play out in practice. So this idea of not being asked for policy advice, in practice, policy advice is as much about this kind of back and forth and iteration of objective options, recommendations, and that going round and round and back and forth until you kind of land the different dimensions of that in a self-consistent way.
Wonderful. Another amazing and comprehensive answer. And I can see some of the work that we do with ANSOG kind of takes that similar role of an iterative dialogue with our government partners. That's brilliant. I think we've already touched on this in our discussion so far, but is there anything else that you'd like to say about the kind of institutional role that the public service plays within the Westminster system and how this shapes the way that advice should be given by public administrators?
Yes, I think it is also very important to think about the APS as a national democratic institution within that framework, within that contemporary Australian Westminster settlement, if we think about it that way. And so we need to think about the role as an institution and the value of it as an institution and the values that the institution lives by. I think it's really important to think about the role of professional advice and being able to say with integrity, this is what we think, but also to understand also with integrity that the role of the public service is not some freestanding agent in this, but within a Westminster system to serve the government of the day. And that's a really important practice issue to be worked through in your mind. And I think particularly as you're working your way through the public service, as you're becoming more senior, it's something that's, again, needs to be thought about at all levels, but is actually probably most acute an issue at the mid-levels in the public service often, because what I just described in the last answer as a back and forth with the minister, that's generally the preserve of the deputy secretary and the secretary to have the direct conversations with ministers. And so it's hard as a mid-level public servant, as a EL, to be going back and forth on the objective statement in the way that I talked about. So then you need to think about, well, what is the value of the institution and what are the values that our senior leaders are looking to project and live by in this department? And so that's absolutely a proper question for everyone in the organisation to be thinking about. And it's really important that senior leaders take the responsibility to say that public servants need to think about their professional advice with rigour, with professional integrity, and think about what that means in terms of evidence and argumentation and recommendation. Now, this goes to, should we call it, matters of craft in a big way, because it's formulations matter. There is a difference between saying, should you choose to do this, Minister, this is the way you can implement it. Or, you know, in briefs, I've often written, in the last brief, you chose option B. This is how you would go about implementing option B. I think that's completely consistent with also a kind of professional technical opinion that option A is still a better option, but it's respecting the role within the institutional, broader democratic institutional structures that we have in Australia. An example that has been put to me a few times is that there's a analogy in the legal system where we, I think, understand why it's so important for a proper defence to be given to anyone that comes to court, even if it looks overwhelmingly likely that they're guilty, even if their lawyer in some personal professional way suspects that they might be guilty, that there is an important service to the court to put the best case that they can on behalf of their client. And I think we understand why there is institutional value in that, that overall justice is better served by those institutional arrangements, even if there is some awkwardness on the way through by what things look like in some of the individual interactions.
So you're almost saying that there's a long game here for public servants around their structural role in the system, and that's a way to reconcile personal ethics?
Exactly right. And, well, that's the way you've got to line it up with your personal ethics. Mm. So your personal ethics have got to be cognizant that that is the contribution you're making. That is the service that you are doing. It is a broader service. And if you can't reconcile that, then I think you need to think seriously about doing something else, right? That's always got to be an option. Now, of course, people's personal circumstances, family circumstances, other things mean that they're in employment in different ways at different times. I understand that. But I think as you think seriously about your job, you've got to think about what is the contribution you're trying to make, and you need to, in your own mind, reconcile some broader service here, which is different to thinking that you are just putting forward what you view at a particular time in the particular way that you want to do it. That's not what being a public servant is. There are other places perhaps where that's more appropriate as your role, but that's not what being a public servant is. And I think that there is honour in service, and there is honour in service in that broader institutional sense that I've just been putting, but it is a bounded set of expression, there is no doubt, and that you sign up on the basis that you believe that bounded set of expression is still valuable in terms of the overall contribution.
Wonderful, and again, amazing food for thought for the student's third assignment, which is writing a personal reflective essay about their professional role within the public service. Thank you so much, Juba. That's been an amazing conversation.
I'll just mention, Laura, as we finish, that the APS Academy was launched just quite recently on July the 22nd, and there's a lot of material there about these sorts of things that we've just been talking about, including some really interesting material about working with government, so that goes to the Westminster questions we've just been talking about, and integrity and values. And I think there's some really important material available through the Academy for helping people think about these things as well.
Brilliant, another useful resource. Thanks so much, Shiva.